Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Solari Report. This is John Titus and Catherine Austin Fitz. We're recording on December 14th for publication on December 15th. And this week, there's a lot of something, John. What's our theme?
The theme this week is Pivots Are Us. I think something like half of our stories involve a significant pivot.
I just said down.
Meaning either a change of position or really just a reversal of position.
Right. I just sat down and read a whole slew of propaganda magazines on the Chinese pivot. And you realize, oh my God, they just, it's like turning a switch off, on, boom, overnight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not just China. It's here too.
Yeah. It's Europe, all over everywhere. It's everywhere. It's Europe. It's Asia. Anyway, so let's dive in. Let's talk about the big one.
Yeah, let's go. Well, which big one do you mean? Okay,
Ukraine.
Let's just, the most recent big one, the war in Ukraine, is U.S. finalizing plans to send Patriot missile defense system to Ukraine. So, you know, if one missile system doesn't work because it's old and never really worked to begin with, send another one. The Biden administration is finalizing plans to send the Patriot missile defense system to Ukraine. That could be announced soon, according to sources. Ukraine has been calling for this because the system supposedly is highly effective at intercepting ballistic and cruise missiles as Ukraine comes under a barrage of Russian missile and drone attacks that have destroyed key infrastructure around the country, including a lot of power. It would be the most effective long-range defensive systems sent to the country. And officials say it will help secure airspace for NATO nations in Eastern Europe. Well, that remains to be seen. But that's another material shift for the U.S. Like, just they keep ratcheting it up.
Right, right. And I say
it's almost as if the minute U.S. position is, we'll take a look at that. It's almost as if the U.S. position is, you know, let's just keep bumping up the pressure until we find the red line over Russia.
Right. Right.
But here's the chart. Here's the Raytheon chart, right? Raytheon makes them as the Patriot. Here we go. Here's the five-day chart.
Right. So this is Raytheon and Lockheed both make the Patriot missile. But you can see Raytheon got quite a bounce and the S&P got quite a bounce on the announcement or the floating that this was going to happen. And it's quite a bounce. It's almost made me wonder, John, if the guys from Lockheed and Raytheon were watching Money and Markets and said, you know, the Chinese arms guys are making way too much money. We need a Christmas present.
Yeah, right, right. But that's the five-day chart. And if you actually look at that, the S&P 500 goes up more than Raytheon does.
Yep.
Yeah, anyway, but let's look at the long-range charts. This is 54 years. Look at this. So the S&P goes up 800%. Raytheon's up 7,500%. It's amazing.
Right. Right. Well, control is rising much more strongly, and there's much more money behind control than there is behind prosperity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Pretty simple.
Right. The flips, also, there's a lot more money in war than there is in peace.
Right. Well, because war's about control.
The bankers love wars.
Right.
It was about control. It's about debt. About ginning up debt.
Right.
You know? So anyway, that's an interesting chart. But let's keep going on with Ukraine. This is about Merkel. Okay. This is a source I don't really know, son of the new American Revolution at sonar21.com. But this is about the Minsk agreement. And really it's about Merkel's candor with this. The Minsk agreements, by way of background, were negotiated between Kiev and the breakaway regions of Luhansk and Donetsk back in 2014 and 15. In essence, they agreed to a ceasefire, and the start of negotiations were going to begin involving France and Germany. Okay, they were the guarantors of this Minsk agreement, sort of ceasefire. But the other day, Merkel comes out and reveals something about what was going on 8 years ago. She says, quote, the 2004 Minsk agreement was an attempt to give Ukraine time. She also used this time to get stronger. She, meaning Ukraine, also used this time to get stronger, as you can see today. The Ukraine of 2014-2015 is not the Ukraine of today, as you saw in the Battle of Debaltseve. I guess I don't know how to pronounce that. Railway town in Donbass, Donetsk Oblast. In early 2015, Putin could have easily have overrun them at the time, and I very much doubt that the NATO countries could have done as much then as they do now to help Ukraine. So she's just coming right out and saying, yeah, well, that was all in bad faith, the whole thing.
Right, right.
It was just a ploy to buy time.
I was discussing with a group of people today at how less successful the COVID-19 effort has been for the people doing it than they had hoped. And one of the reasons is they're not agreement capable. And so they're not agreement capable with each other. In other words, if all these people are not agreement capable, how are they going to trust each other? How are they going to trust the deals? And they don't trust each other because none of them are trustworthy. It's kind of interesting.
No honor among thieves.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. It's a blessing in disguise.
Right. But you think you're being clever.
Yeah.
You think you're being clever, you're slitting your own throat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's it for Ukraine. Let's turn to space military global turf wars. A couple weeks ago, and maybe it was last week, we talked about police stations, Chinese police stations in the U.S., and an NGO had issued a report about this really going around the globe. Newsweek has a follow-up story on this. Get a load of this. Full list of China's unofficial police stations around the world. And so an NGO that documented dozens of undeclared Chinese overseas police service centers, they called them, in September, has now confirmed the operations of dozens more, a new report said on Monday. And so they set forth a list here, and it's long. You can see country by country. I've highlighted the countries that have four or more, okay? So you can see Canada, it's got 5. France, 4. Italy leads the pack with 11. It's Western nations. Isn't that interesting? Spain,
right.
9. United States, 4.
I can't believe that the United States isn't greater than 4. I
tend to be suspicious of that myself.
Right.
But it's interesting. Yeah, that's just an interesting report. And obviously there'll be a link in the show notes in the PDF after people want to look at
and
it.
And as you said, that can't happen unless those governments permit it.
It can't happen unless those governments permit it.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. So you're building a network in place for a purpose.
And that kind of represents a pivot. It's sort of the nations that have agreed to this are now revealing to this NGO, hey, they have these police stations. Does that strike you as odd?
No, because you're required, the way the game works is you're required to tell people what you're going to do before you do it. They're telling you what they're going to do.
Yeah. Well, the question would be then, did China know in advance that the NGOs are just going to rat them out?
They had to know it was coming eventually. I don't know.
Right.
Right.
Because the U.S. isn't agreement capable. That's why. Of course they knew. Anyway. Right. That's an interesting. I still have trouble getting my arms around that story. Like, what's really going on here? Here's what I believe. There's Chinese police stations in the U.S.
Yeah.
That I'm pretty sure about that. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And so the question is, when are they going to stop from dealing with, because if you read the PRC constitution, it applies to all Han descendants everywhere. It's a race-based constitution. Have you ever read it? I mean, So to what extent, when did those police stations stop from enforcing against Han descendants or PRC citizens who are living abroad and involve themselves in the affair of the country? And I just go back, the Treaty of Westphalia is being torn up as we speak. And this is just another example of that.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Okay, let's keep it going. Next space military global turf war story and our next pivot story. China again confirms it is the mystery buyer of massive gold with first official purchase in 3 years. So the backdrop to the story is central banks bought basically 400 tons of gold in the July through September period, more than quadrupling on the year. Okay. Of that 400 tons, Turkey, Uzbekistan, and India reported purchases of 31, 26, and 18 tons, respectively. But it's unclear who bought the rest, who bought the remaining 300 tons. Okay, then there's a publication in Japan, in Nikkei, that goes on to suggest that seeing how Russia has been hit by monetary sanctions by the West, Japan speculates it's China and some other countries must be hurrying to reduce dependence on the dollar, and they're probably behind it. And then turns out, well, that was right, because overnight, the People's Bank of China officially reported an increase in its gold reserves for the first time in more than 3 years, confirming that the world's most populous country was indeed the mystery buyer in the bull market, in the bullion market.
Okay, so a couple of things here. Remember, China is one of the biggest gold producers in the world, and they don't necessarily have to buy. They can buy internally from the producers. I believe that China's been buying way more than is officially reported and has way more holdings than has been officially reported. But if you go back and look at the state of our currency, I described the fact that Moscow had set up the Russian Central Bank had set up an office in Beijing, and they were setting up their, the two central bank relationships so they could trade in gold and they could settle in gold. So they've been working on that. It was all part of among the BRIC nations talking about bringing out a gold-backed currency. So we know that one of the rumors that's been spooking the dollar, because the dollar's come down a lot over the last couple of weeks, is that the Russians are working on trading gold for oil with the Chinese, which I'm sure the answer is yes. And, but they're also still continue to work on a BRICS gold-backed currency. So, if you look at the pressure on the dollar syndicate over the last couple of weeks, it's been extreme. The dollar is now down from, almost 114 to 103. So,
we'll see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're seeing lots of signs of the dollar syndicate pushing back. And I think Patriot missiles in Ukraine is all part of that.
Yeah, could be. It's interesting you say they settle in gold because on the heels of agreement and capability, because if you're going to settle in gold, you're not going to settle with physical gold every week. That's too cumbersome. You need a system where you can,
right.
It's reliable and trustworthy. You have to, if you're going to settle in like paper gold or digital gold, you have to be agreement capable.
Right. But the Chinese and the Russians are.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And on that note, let's go to our next story in Space, Military, and Global Turf Wars. Another pivot.
This is a huge one because this is also about oil.
Right. So China inks deals with Saudis from Huawei Cloud Computing to expand their military ties.
Huawei.
let's see if I can get that a little bit better. There we go. It might be in there. On the first full day of visit, so Xi Jinping has a 3-day visit over in China.
Amazing.
Saudi Arabia.
3 days is amazing.
This is a guy who was holed up throughout the entire pandemic production. And now he's on a 3-day visit. That's a long time. On the first day of his visit, where he was lavishly greeted and giving red carpet treatment after arrival in the kingdom, Chinese President Xi Jinping met with King Salman and Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, MBS, on Thursday, and wide-ranging economic and tech trade agreements were signed to the tune of tens of billions of dollars, along with pledges to expand military cooperation. Okay? But missing from the leader's public statement was any mention of the more controversial aspects of a relationship that have raised hackles of U.S. officials. So no raising hackles. So we don't want to talk about advanced military sales, expansion of 5G and 6G telecommunications networks, and pricing some of Saudi oil sales in yuan, which have accelerated this year. We don't want to talk about that, but that's what's going on over there. Yeah. That's why that visit's 3 days. They're covering a lot of ground in 3 days.
If you have a Huawei cloud, you're expanding 5G and 6G negotiations right there.
Yeah, right.
Yep.
Right. So that's, you know, anything to add to that, that story?
So the clear signal is the U.S., you know, we went off the gold standard and we went on an oil standard. If the Saudis are pulling out, we're no longer, the dollar's no longer on an oil standard. And the question is, what standard is it on?
Right. Right. So to your subscriber, the benefit of your subscriber, the gold was back, the dollar was backed by gold until August of 1971.
Right.
Then that peg gets broken. And in 73, Kissinger comes up with, well, let's have the petrodollar.
Right.
Meaning what we'll do is we'll require all the, you know, the countries,
right.
Gulf countries, to conduct oil transactions, buying and selling of oil in U.S. dollars. And what you're seeing with this story is that that's just getting tossed out the window.
Right.
Right?
The oil
so
producer.
So that puts a dollar.
Right. So
that's,
so
that puts it in a precarious position.
So Russia and the Middle East are out of the petrodollar. The only ones left in it is Texas.
Yeah, right.
Right.
Right. That's it. Not a good look for the dollar right there. Okay, let's pivot ourselves to FedWatch, and we'll have our first story here is yet another pivot. This is unbelievable. Vanguard quits Net Zero Group, marking biggest defection yet, okay? Vanguard Group, which is, I think, the second largest asset manager in the world, is walking out of the world's largest climate finance alliance, marking the coalition's biggest defection to date as Republicans step up their threats against firms deemed hostile towards the fossil fuel industry. Withdrawing from the Net Zero Asset Managers Initiative, which is a subunit of Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero. This is Mark Carney's brainchild, the former Bank of England governor, who was the chief architect of this nonsense, said earlier this year that the alliance has enjoyed considerable growth and now represents some 550 members of roughly $150 trillion of assets in total. We'll make that $143 trillion because Vanguard just left. And so he says it's not a big deal. You know, people defect.
So this is a huge deal. This is an unbelievably huge deal. And I'll tell you what I think it represents. If you look at how many highly intelligent, highly capable, highly productive, highly experienced, either financial people or industry people who are looking at what Carney and this group is doing and are saying, this is absolutely insanity. This is bozo. This is BS. This is, you know, I can't tell you the fury and the anger in, you know, the most capable people. And if you look at how much money companies are wasting on trying to pretend to go along with this stuff, it's a huge, I'm still struggling for words. It's like everybody having to come to the office and dress up for Halloween every day. Do you know what I mean? And at some point,
right.
If you're Vanguard and you're responsible for that much of other people's money, you have to say, you know, we don't have time for the howdy doody show. You know, we don't have time. We can't do this. It's just a joke. It's so intellectually bankrupt. We can't make it go. We can't even, you know, we can't even make the appearance of it go. It's just.
Right.
You know, it's like
it's cute. It's cute, but we're done with this. Okay.
Well, but if you look at what it's like to try and implement this into businesses and investment portfolios and companies, not only does it waste millions of hours, but you get no place and it adds nothing and it doesn't work and it's intellectually bankrupt. And at some point it so messes up the morale of everybody in the system that it's unworkable. It's just unworkable.
Well, you're not serving your clients' best interest.
It's worse than that because I mean, look at all the things we've done because of government regulations of implementing things that don't serve your clients' interest. So Vanguard's been buying treasuries for years, you know, knowing full well that money's disappearing out of the back door of the U.S. government. You know, that doesn't serve your client's interest. But it's workable because everybody just pretend that treasuries are okay. And as long as you pretend it and the central banks back it, you know, the pretense works. But this is so unworkable. It's so you can't get it to function. I mean, that's the problem. It's like driving a car with flat tires. Until you spent time trying to understand how companies are implementing this, you can't fathom how I don't know. I'm still searching for a metaphor to describe how unworkable it is to try and implement this stuff. And of course, Carney doesn't care because he's flying around in jet planes, you know, thinking conceptual. Right. But you're a trained intellectual engineer. You know what it's like when politicians who think and speak conceptually, you know, come up with these crazy ideas. And if you're an engineer, they can't be implemented. They're just nuts.
Right. They just tell them no, it doesn't work. Well, we never would have gone along with this shit to begin with. I mean, he's an engineer.
Well, you can't believe it got as far as it got. I mean, it's anyway. So
yeah, I mean, guy, the second law of thermodynamics is not negotiable. So
there you go.
Take a quiet exit and stop embarrassing yourself.
Right. So I'm very excited
about that. That's the response.
I'm very excited
that's
about Vanguard.
Big news. It's $7 trillion. I mean, your number two player in your team just walked out. It's a big deal. Don't tell me it's not a big deal. It's a big deal.
When $7 trillion
just left the Bulls, it's a big deal.
Right. When $7 trillion sends a message saying reality matters, we're making progress. Right. That's progress.
That's a big pivot. It's another pivot this week.
Yep.
Okay, here's something that's not working. Let's go to a map of double-digit inflation in almost half the world. So you can see the color scheme here. The darker the red, you know, the worse the inflation. So let's just kind of zoom in and see if I can get the trouble spots all in the zoom. Yeah, there we go. Okay.
Wow.
So here are the bad ones. Turkey at 88.5%. Sudan at 103%, Iran 53%, Zimbabwe really kind of, I got to say, no surprise there, nor is this Argentina really a surprise. Venezuela 156%. So those are the bad ones. But also notice what not in that area is Ukraine not doing too well itself.
Right.
At 26%, 27%, you know, got to get off the arrow. Anyway. That's an interesting map.
It's a lot of pain in the world.
Any comment on that?
Well, you know, it's funny because I look at things like that. I was just talking with a group of people trying to estimate how many people have been killed as a result of the governmental actions over the last 3 years, basically since March 2020. And one of the things we talked about is the extent to which the economic sanctions and the financial and monetary manipulations and inflation have caused more deaths than anything. So when I look at that map, what I see are deaths.
Yeah.
Right. It's an ugly picture.
There's a correlation. It might be a little, with Ukraine, it's a little bit loose. They're getting pounded and shelled, but inflation's, it's really bad. I was in a grocery store last night. I thought, maybe I just had a taste for pimento cheese. And I look and just a container of pimento cheese is $6.99.
Right.
Like, I'm not paying $7 for pimento cheese. Are you kidding me?
I just keep hearing stories of...
And the U.S. is pretty stable. I mean, yeah, our inflation is bad, but it's not 88% or 126%.
Right.
You know.
So what I'm hearing are all sorts of companies across Europe who have to shut down because they can't afford their energy bill. You know, if you're a hairdresser and you've got a 2,000 pound a month hair, you know, energy bill, you got to shut down.
Yeah, you can't. Right.
Right. You can't do 100 haircuts to cover your gas bill.
And that's not an unrealistic number.
Right.
Because those hair dryers are running all the time.
Right.
You know, at 1,000 watts. They're running all the time and energy is expensive. Yeah, you're right. You can't operate at a loss. You can't operate a cash furnace. There was a skit on Saturday Night Live once where this guy set up a business and he's selling $20 bills for $10. That's his business. And he's got a line out the door. Like, well, that's, yeah, you're popular
guy.
What's
his name, Jeff Bezos?
right.
That's okay. The intelligence and agencies are supporting a roll-up here.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't do that. You can't sell $20 bills for $10 as a business model. That's not going to work. You got to shut down. Okay. Anyway, let's keep it going in FedWatch. Next story. This is one of our few non-pivot stories. Year-end surprise from the Journal. A tax bill on top of your mutual fund losses. Oh, no. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
In this brutal year for markets, some mutual fund investors are facing a double whammy, big losses and tax bills. Why is that? That's happening because fund managers have had to sell holdings to raise cash to pay investors leaving their funds. That often triggers payouts of taxable capital gains for investors who remain.
Right.
So if you're in a mutual fund, get ready.
Right.
Maybe coming.
Because a lot of mutual funds have had quite a good run over the last 5 to 10 years. So they have gains. You know, and if they have to make sales, then it's going to be painful. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It is going to be painful. Okay. Let's continue with FedWatch, but not the non-monetary version of FedWatch. And we'll start with the WHO with recent secret meetings and what's going on here. This is, you know, I don't really know totally what to make of the story from a Substacker named James Rogowski. From New Zealand. And he writes, he says, many thanks to Greg R. of New Zealand for submitting a FOIA request to the New Zealand government. He requested a copy of information that New Zealand submitted to the WHO regarding the proposed amendments to the international health regulations. Now, you remember earlier this year, the international health regulation amendments were up and they didn't go through.
Right.
Okay. Well, it's never over until it's over, right? Okay, because these guys are persistent, busy little beavers. So he goes on and says, it appears that New Zealand did not actually submit any new proposed amendments, but merely commented on the amendments that the United States submitted earlier this year. This seems to imply that the United States has resubmitted the same amendments that they did earlier the year, which were rejected earlier. And then he goes on and he discusses some of the amendments and they're redlined and whatnot. But basically, the U.S. is back at it. Like, if it didn't work the first time, just go back in and resubmit them.
They did in May, because we were in Geneva in May, and you came in and spoke at that press conference. They put together a secret committee and have been meeting together ever since to try and implement a secret treaty that you know, essentially achieves the same thing again, but puts into place a vaccine passport globally. So, you know, and that's part of the vaccine passport plus CBDC is the ultimate last piece of control that needs to go into place. And they're trying to engineer this from behind the scenes and pop it out with essentially the sovereign governments turning over control of their sovereignty to the WHO, both through the passport system. And the G20 all got together and declared, okay, you know, we're all going to adopt the vaccine passport. Now, in my opinion, the U.S. can't do that without a 2/3 vote of the Senate, which is one of the reasons
I agree. Yeah.
The debate over, you know, sort of who got what house in Congress during the election was so important. But there is no doubt James Rogowski has been the best Substack blogger covering whatever the WHO's up to and trying to get any information from out, you know, these secret negotiations. But these guys are going to come back around and try and control the world through the WHO. So, you know, it's another example, just like the BIS, of these international organizations who think they can overrun national and individual sovereignty completely. And Rogowski's just on their tail like a jet fighter.
Hmm. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, they're not giving up for sure.
They're not giving up, but neither are we.
Right.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good luck with their plans.
Okay. Let's continue on with the next story on FedWatch. This is an interesting one. So this is an archive story. It's from the journal, but there's three versions. Normally I pick the latest of the versions, the most recent. But the last two versions of the Wall Street Journal story had a picture just of the Trump building. And the first version, which I'm going to show you here, has a different picture. It's not of a building. So let's just go by way of that background to the story about the Trump Organization. Okay? Here you go. Wall Street Journal. Trump Organization convicted of criminal tax fraud in New York trial. So take a look at this guy. So this is the face they wanted to put with the Trump Organization, right? I mean, not the most trustworthy looking. He looks a little shifty. I mean, anyway, it's kind of funny. But it's funny they put his face, they put a person's face there. Because it's right. Like, well, wait a minute. Okay, was he convicted? Because you told me here that it's an organization. And that's what makes this story so weird, which I'll get to in a minute. But let me cover the story with what the journal says, and I'll tell you what they're not telling you. Former President Donald Trump's family business, so the business, okay? Not the family. The family business was convicted right. Tuesday of criminal tax fraud, et cetera. Corporate entities were guilty, okay, of all criminal counts they faced. And the story goes on like that. The significance of that is that the corporation was convicted, okay? Legally speaking, though, I'm going to tell you, and I've been on this for 10 years now, it's legally impossible to convict a business entity unless some person in that organization, in that corporation, committed crimes themselves, and not just the janitor either. You need high-ranking corporate executives to commit crimes in order to convict the business organization under the doctrine, because the doctrine that you use to convict a corporation, which is really just a legal fiction, the doctrine is called respondeat superior, which means basically you have enough corporate people in the enterprise committing crimes that it's now fair and it's now open season on the organization itself as a criminal enterprise. So right. When this story tells you they convicted the family, the first question, or they convicted the business, the first question should be, okay, well, who committed crimes? And the answer is nobody was convicted of crimes. The whole thing is reeks of like—
Well, but here's what's also strange. They describe total fines of $1.6 million. In a criminal tax case, a fine of $1.6 million is so small that you can't even fathom they'd really bring a case.
Right. The whole story is just there for purposes of headlines.
Right. Something is very strange to me.
It's the blackwash Trump, to be blunt.
Right.
They're trying to, it's a smear. It's a smear tactic by a court. They get this chiseling charge of the corporation on tax fraud or whatever. There's nobody convicted because they can't sustain their burden of proof, frankly. So they get the prosecutors to say, oh, well, we convicted the organization. Nobody goes to jail, but it enables you to put a headline up in the journal like that, where you can sort of tar Trump himself under that banner. It's really sleazy.
Right.
Really sleazy.
And of course, 1.6 million sounds, you know, in the middle of rural heartland, 1.6 million sounds like a lot of money.
Yeah, they know it does. Yeah. And they know the criminal conviction sounds bad. And that's why they're doing it. This is one of the reasons I kind of was trying to get out of the legal profession. It's just seeing sleaze tactics like that become the norm. It's like, you know what? I've had enough of this.
Right.
You know, if you're that dishonest, forget it. It's not worth it.
Right.
You know. Okay, let's continue on another story. Another pivot story in FedWatch. This is a big one from CNBC. Google, Oracle, Amazon, and Microsoft awarded Pentagon cloud deal of up to $9 billion combined. And so this is the four companies, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, Oracle. They get a $9 billion contract through 2028. The significance here is that the original contract had awarded the Joint Enterprise Defense Infrastructure, or JEDI, to Microsoft in 2019. But a legal battle ensued as Amazon, the top player in the cloud infrastructure market, challenged the Pentagon's decision regarding Microsoft. And Oracle challenged the Pentagon's pick as well. And now it's going four ways.
Okay. So this is an incredibly important and very big story. And that is because once you have all the 17 intelligence agencies in an Amazon cloud, We have the Navy in a Leidos cloud, Leidos being the successor to Lockheed Martin government IT division. And then we have tried, the DOD, the Pentagon, the full Pentagon, including the Army, has tried for several years to outsource theirs into a cloud. You know, first it was going to be Amazon, then Microsoft ended up winning after you saw a change in leadership at DOD. Then you had the legal battles, and now they figured out a way to give a piece of the action to everybody who was screaming, right? But now you've got the entire U.S. government in private corporate clouds. And what that means, John, is that you can re-engineer the entire federal government through the governmental payment systems through those clouds. So,
and beyond the reach of the FOIA requests.
Right.
You can do it in darkness.
Right. So this increases the ability. I mean, if you think they've stolen a lot of money now, you ain't seen nothing yet in terms of what this can do in combination with FASB 56. So this is a huge danger point, and it is an inflection point in the ongoing financial coup d'etat. So this is, if anything, this may be the completion of the coup. So, I mean, obviously that, I would say you need CBDC and vaccine passports to make that happen.
I would say you need CBDC,
Right. But this is a huge leap forward.
It's a big,
And as this contract goes into operation, what it means is change is going to accelerate. It could even accelerate dramatically.
Yeah. It's a big change on the infrastructure level, for sure. Right. Maybe the biggest.
Right.
On that level. Okay, let's finish it off in FedWatch with this story. When you sent this, I was like, "What? Why am I reading this?" And then I was like, "Whoa, this is from a publication called Bridge Michigan. It's local. Like, what the heck?" Okay, so the deal here, there's really no title for the story. Kind of weird. Anyway, let's just get into it. So Kathy Sernick arrived Thursday at Detroit Metropolitan Wayne County Airport. So that's the hub of Delta. She's ready to board her flight to Sedona, but first she piloted new technology in the Delta concourse. The technology, dubbed Parallel Reality, was launched at the airport on June 29th by Delta Airlines and Misapplied Sciences, a technology startup. It allows up to 100 airport travelers to look at the same digital flight screen, which gives each traveler alone a summary of their personal travel information. So there are 100 different people are looking at the same screen, but they're all seeing different things, right? How do they do this? Pixels in the display project millions of light rays that can be directed to a specific person. Motion sensors follow travelers as they move so that no matter where they stand, they can see their flight data, but nobody else's. Holy cow! Right. That strikes me as super
dangerous. Which means if you're not doing well on your social credit score, you can't see flight data, any flight data, right?
Right, right.
So
it means a lot of things. It also means you could be shown stuff that's absolutely totally false.
Exactly.
I mean, the black ops would go ape over something like this.
Oh, I'm sure they have already.
I'm sure they have already.
Why would you name your company? Exactly. Why would you call your company Misapplied Sciences? Right?
Maybe it was. Yeah.
but I have experienced during the litigation. I experienced IT systems sabotage and try and sabotage me again and again. Like suddenly your GIS software is sending you, you know, in the opposite direction, and it's literally doing it. I mean, it's. You know, so if you look at how you can get tricked and played, but with this technology, it's unbelievable. I would never trust in a million years a flight board that was targeted at me. I would never trust it, ever. I want to see something that's public, you know, for everybody. And
right.
Then
show
maybe
it, show
I trust
it to
it.
Everybody, and then I believe it. Maybe.
Right. Maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
That strikes me as really dangerous. But I wanted to put it in because it's just like, it's so jarring that that's going on. It's been going on in Detroit since June.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Okay. Let's pivot to CBDC and crypto. The first story is a pivot. This is from our buddy Neil Kashkari. He's the president of the Minneapolis Fed. Okay, so there's a Fed governor named Waller. I can't remember his first name, James or Peter, who's openly opposed to CBDC. But Kashkari is opposed to CBDC. Are you kidding me? Let's just cut to this one. I'll play this video. Okay, here we go.
Because I'm pretty skeptical. I keep asking anybody at the Fed or outside of the Fed to explain to me what problem this is solving. I can send anybody in this room $5 with Venmo right now. Right? No, seriously. So what is it that a CBDC could do that Venmo can't do? And all I get is a bunch of hand waving. I get a bunch, well, maybe it's better for financial inclusion. Maybe it's better for cross-border remittances. Maybe. Is there any evidence that it is? And, you know, they say, well, what about China? China's doing it. Well, I can see why China would do it. If they want to monitor every one of your transactions, you could do that with a central bank digital currency. You can't do that with Venmo. If you want to impose negative interest rates, you could do that with a central bank digital currency. You can't do that with Venmo. And if you want to directly tax customer accounts, you do that with a central bank digital currency. You can't do that with Venmo. So I get why China would be interested.
So, you know, I got to hand it to the guy. That's a really good take.
Kashkari didn't get the memo. What happened?
I don't know. You tell me. What Mr. Bailout there is doing, that's the guy who was the architect of the bailout of TARP.
Well, but it's almost like he's saying,
right hand. That's the guy who came up with $700 right. billion bailout.
I'm on board for giving trillions of dollars to my friends, but I'm not on board for instituting a system that could strip me of my assets. Now, wait a minute.
maybe. I guess. I was just stunned when I saw that. I was like, I felt like I was looking at the Delta flight board.
I am willing to welcome Neil Kashkari to our side and our team any time of the day. I mean, if Vanguard can come over, Neil Kashkari can come over, right?
I'm wary. Okay.
Let's park keep him it going. Vanguard. CB-
yeah, you're in the satellite lot, guy. Okay, let's keep it going in the CBDC with a report from the BIS. Crypto trading and Bitcoin prices, evidence from a new database of retail adoption. Let me see if I can zoom in here and get it all. Let me try that one more time. There we go. We show that due to price declines, an estimated 73 to 81% of retail investors have likely lost money on their initial investment in Bitcoin. Our results suggest that rising Bitcoin prices are what drive crypto adoption, consistent with theories of feedback trading, rather than alternative explanations. In other words, people aren't really investing in it because it's going to be a new currency. They're investing in it because they think they can make money.
Right.
On that note, let's look at some Bitcoin charts, okay?
Okay.
You ready?
Yep.
All right. Here's the all-time chart. And so now Bitcoin is at 17,756.
Yeah, it's a little bit higher today.
Bam.
Yeah, it's up to 18. Yeah. It's a little bit higher today. We made this chart last night.
And let's look at the 2-year chart. So not looking so hot there. Okay.
Yeah, so the big swing is, you know, it hit 65,000 in November last year.
Right.
And it's just come down a tremendous amount.
Yeah, that's not quite showing it, but that's a weekly chart. So
yeah.
You know, when they chart these things on the week, they chop out some of the finer like spikes.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a 2-year chart. So let's go to the
5-day. Like
it's real.
Yeah, so what I really wanted to show is what it looks like to me is that Sam's arrest gave Bitcoin quite a jump, and Tether too. Yeah, we've got a Tether chart. So the Bitcoin guys were very relieved that Sam is now in a Bahamian prison.
Yeah, let's go to the Tether chart and take a look at that. It's the same kind of deal.
Yeah, big jump.
You know, right around the time of the drill. I don't know what time zone that is, but that's right around the time of his arrest.
Yeah,
and that makes sense.
That's a guess because I am not close to the Bitcoin or the Tether market, but that's what it looked like. It jumped on the announcement of his arrest.
Yeah, because it was like, well, he got arrested. So he's a bad actor, but it wasn't the whole industry getting arrested. So it sort of bore out their theory, like, hey, you're throwing out the baby with the bathwater here.
Right.
So I think that, and we had talked about that, like, well, you're unfairly, you know, tarring Bitcoin with some of these others, you know.
Well, but I also
some bad
think
actors like Sam.
If Sam had been allowed to testify, it could have brought a lot of transparency to both what happened to FTX, but also what's going on in the market. And I think that transparency was going to be unsettling for the whole crypto world and the whole financial system.
Right.
So.
Right. Okay. Let's turn to, still in crypto, but turn to CZ and Binance. There's a bit of controversy there. He's trying to distance himself from Sam Bankman-Fried himself. Binance is saying, no, we, you know, all of our assets are fully backed. We've got an auditor. Now, their auditor, it turns out, really wasn't playing ball with them too much. Binance's alleged crypto audit failed. Not even its auditor would vouch for it. Binance says an audit shows proof of reserves of customer funds, but its auditor will not vouch for that, basically. And here's what they say, Binance. We are showing evidence and proof that Binance has funds that cover all of our user assets one-to-one, plus some reserves. When a user deposits one Bitcoin, Binance reserves increase by at least one Bitcoin to ensure client funds are fully backed. It is important to note that this does not include Binance's corporate holdings, which are kept on a completely separate ledger. So they're trying to, you know, that's their public position. But they got an auditor to come in. Their auditor really wouldn't go along with them. Nish here has a nice summary at the end, which is why I included the story. Wait, what? CZ, the head of the company, says it's bad news when exchanges move large amounts of crypto to prove their wallet address. But then CZ itself moved 127,000 bitcoins. Whoa. CZ says the auditor demanded this, but Mazars, the alleged auditor, does not call it an audit. They're like, no, that wasn't an audit. Mazars would make no representation regarding the appropriateness of the procedures. And this alleged auditor said that the agreed upon procedures were requested by Binance, not by Mazars. So in other words, you're controlling this alleged audit, which makes it no audit at all.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, this is an industry that's never been subjected to any kind of serious education or regulation as to custodian practices. So.
Yeah, right. Right.
I don't know what to say. I think the pain in this market is far from over.
We shall see. Let's turn to our next story before we jump to that conclusion. This is Sam Bankman-Fried. Criminal charges were unsealed. They were filed yesterday and unsealed yesterday, meaning Tuesday, the 13th. So the charges are, by the DOJ, conspiracy to defraud the U.S., wire fraud, securities fraud, and money laundering. Federal prosecutors in the Southern District of New York unsealed charges. The Southern District is also where the bankruptcy is pending. Unsealed charges against disgraced FTX co-founder Sam Bankman-Fried, charging him with conspiracy to commit wire fraud and securities fraud. Okay, well, conspiracy is an interesting charge because you have to have somebody to conspire with. Also, standalone charges, meaning not a conspiracy, of securities fraud and wire fraud, money laundering, and significantly, conspiracy to defraud the United States and campaign finance regulations. Uh-oh. So, Democratic Party, you know, maybe we'll see. We'll see whether you have to give some money back. So, the whole idea here is you got to conspire with others. And the question is, while it is not known yet if this is the case, who might be cooperating at this point? This guy says, I would not be surprised if Miss Ellison, Caroline Ellison, was one of the first persons seeking to help the prosecution. Remember, she came to New York and hired, you know, well-known criminal defense firm. And now it looks like she was making a deal to roll over on Sam. But does this story remind you of something? It reminds me of Bernie Madoff, right? It's one guy did this whole thing. It's like, no, one guy didn't do this whole thing. The only difference is nobody rolled over on Bernie. He rolled over on himself. He confessed.
You know something? It keeps reminding me more of Enron than Madoff, although definitely, there are aspects to Madoff. I'll never forget. I don't know if I told you this. Enron kind of went on and on, and then the former chairman, it was announced that he had had a heart attack and died. And 2 weeks later, I was on a flight. I was up in, I was in economy, but the bathrooms were full. And the stewardess told me to go up into first class and use the bathroom there. And I walked up into first class to go to the bathroom. And the guy, the chairman, stood up and turned and walked right into me. He wasn't dead. He was right there.
No kidding.
Yep.
No kidding.
I said, as I always do at these moments, it just keeps getting weirder. I forget what his name was.
Who was that? What was the name of that guy?
He was a tall, thin guy. Let me see if I can look it up.
Anyway.
You know, they put the president in jail, but...
Was it Skilling?
No, Skilling was the president who quit a month before they went down, a month or two before they went down. What was his name? Ken Lay. Yeah, I walked into Ken Lay.
Yeah.
He was right there.
After he was dead.
Yeah.
After he was dead.
2 weeks after the funeral. Yeah. Ken Lay's in first class.
I'm glad you said, I'm always suspicious of these death stories. Always. Like, really?
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. They weren't even afraid to fly around.
Yeah, right. Who's going to cover it? The reason this reminds me of Bernie Madoff is that it the supervillain, the lone supervillain. If you read a book by Charles Ferguson called Predator Nation, there's a section on, it's probably the best writing you'll find in a short space on Bernie Madoff and all the things that were going on. Like, he never placed a trade. He mailed everything out. You know, there's a lot of work. And so if he didn't place a trade and he had to mail these statements out, how did he do things, for example, like compute when people reinvest their dividends? You know, you end up with these fractional shares. Like, instead of 1,000 shares of IBM, you now have 1,004.456.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to fake that in a way that doesn't arouse suspicion. Bernie Madoff didn't do all that by himself.
Right.
He had a lot of people helping him.
If you look at Sam, I mean, if you look at what Sam's done so far that I know about, it took hundreds, if not thousands, of people helping.
Yes. Right.
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 Right. You can't move around billion. That's a lot. You know, people, with $1 billion, you transfer $1 billion. It's not that easy. You know?
Yeah.
It's a very, very complicated thing. He had a lot of help, this guy. The notion of a lone supervillain, that's why it reminds me of Bernie Madoff. It's like, just stop right there. Okay.
Well, here's the
Show
thing.
Show me Bernie, Sam's team.
Bernie Madoff had the knowledge and skills and experience and context to lead a fraud like that. He couldn't do it alone, but he could lead it.
Right.
Sam Bankman-Fried didn't have the knowledge, experience, and skills to lead the fraud he led. That's what I'd like to, So there's a lot of brain power in here, which is why I'd love to get a copy of the testimony he floated that he never gave.
Yeah. I mean, somebody was behind him. Sam Bankman-Fried didn't get a hearing with Bill Clinton and Tony Blair on a stage wearing shorts and a t-shirt. Okay. Somebody was behind him and did that. And it was a big, powerful organization.
Right.
But it looks like they're running with the lone supervillain story, just like they always run with the lone gunman story. It's like, I don't believe any of that. Anyway, okay. So in the show notes, by the way, this week, we're including two other stories on the arrest and indictment of Sam Bankman-Fried. We're just not going to cover them here. You know, but they're kind of interesting. Those two stories we're adding add some interesting color to the story.
I do have to point out that he floated his draft testimony to the media before he flew to Washington to testify. And in it, he blames Sullivan and Cromwell for not allowing him to recapitalize the company and taking down the company and insisting he put the Enron guy in. So he outs Sullivan and Cromwell. He floats that testimony and bam, he suddenly gets arrested and charged. And what I will tell you is the reason that is proof positive he could never have led this. He's that clueless about how the system works that he didn't know if he did that, he would immediately get.
I'll tell you something from a professional point of view. I always wondered when I was practicing why New York attorneys were so much better at controlling their clients than Chicago attorneys. Just generally speaking, New York attorneys were much better able to control their clients. That's an example right there.
Right, right.
Of controlling your client. Oh, yeah? You're going to roll over on us? Okay. And next thing you know, you're in handcuffs. Okay.
In Washington, right, let's turn they, to never ask, they never ask who the charges are. They ask who's representing them. That's the first question always. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's turn to Farmageddon. And every story in Farmageddon this week, which is actually one video and three stories. Every single one, though, is a pivot story.
Yep.
So let's go to the first one. This is from France. This is just great. I love this guy. It's in French, but there's subtitles. So let's just hit it.
Moi, j'ai pas eu le COVID. J'ai eu le vaccin Johnson qui a failli me tuer. Il m'a déformé le cœur. J'ai eu 4 opérations depuis le 3 janvier de cette année.
Mais pourquoi vous êtes vacciné, c'est-à-dire vous prenez le risque?
Mais parce que j'étais député et je ne voulais pas donner le sentiment que je n'accomplissais pas mon travail. Et je ne savais pas non plus que Monsieur Macron n'était pas vacciné. Je ne savais pas non plus que la plupart des membres du gouvernement ne l'étaient pas. Et je ne savais pas qu'un nombre important de mes collègues députés ne l'étaient pas non plus. Moi, je voulais donner l'exemple. Et j'ai dit, mais surtout ne copiez pas sur moi. C'était l'époque où Monsieur Macron, Boris Johnson et tous les autres, et même, il n'y avait pas la guerre encore, le président de la Russie, Poutine, descendait leurs bras blancs. On faisait une injection pour pousser tout le monde à se vacciner. Moi, j'ai dit, je ne le fais pas pour ça. Moi, je le fais parce que je suis un peu connu. Comme ça, vous allez pouvoir voir qu'est-ce que je deviens.
D'accord. Donc,
si je vis et si je suis très bien, vous direz, bon, mais c'est bien. Et si je meurs ou si je tombe malade, vous direz, c'est peut-être mon bien. Eh bien, je suis tombé malade. Et je l'ai dit pendant la campagne électorale. Mais personne n'en a écouté. Et on voulait me faire taire quand je disais ça.
C'est-à-dire, vous-même, en tout cas, vous avez prouvé les effets secondaires graves?
Oui, très graves, très graves, oui. J'ai failli à mourir. Ah oui, j'ai pas eu le Covid.
C'est quoi, en fait? C'est toutes ces campagnes de vaccination pour pousser les gens à les vacciner.
Oui.
Parce qu'il peut avoir des effets secondaires graves.
Mais surtout avec des vaccins.
So there's a lot there. A lot there. Let's just kind of go through it. The member of French Parliament, okay?
Right.
He gets vaccinated basically on false pretenses is what he's saying. He says, I thought everybody's vaccinated. Macron, Johnson, Boris Johnson, they're not vaccinated. I got vaccinated. So I said, you know, hey, if something goes wrong, I'm coming out. Here I'm coming out saying there's serious side effects. The whole campaign, all that fake injections in the arm, that was just to get everybody to get vaccinated just like me, and it's hurting people.
Right.
That's a major, major, major disclosure.
Right. When I got that, I sent it over to France to several colleagues to say, is this for real? And they wrote back and said, yep.
That's incredible.
Yeah. 4 heart surgeries.
I mean, he's... Yeah, not happy. Yeah.
Nope.
Not a happy camper, you know, he got, anyway. But that's a great, great, great video. Okay, let's keep it going in Farmageddon. The next story about DeSantis in Florida. I don't know what is going on with this. I didn't do this, okay? This color here, it looks like he's got, like, somebody put the contrast knob on their filter up too high. It looks terrible. Anyway, DeSantis says he plans to hold Pfizer and Moderna accountable for making false claims about their shots, their mRNA shots, okay? It's a little little vague, though, what he's saying. Hold these manufacturers accountable for this mRNA shot because they said there were no side effects, and we know there have been a lot. Now, we did a study in Florida, and we saw an 86% increase in cardiac-related activity in people ages 18 to 39, from mRNA shots. So we're going to be doing some stuff. Okay, here we get in a mealy mouth. We're going to be doing some stuff.
So he later said they're going to call for a grand jury. In a later event, he said they're going to call for a grand jury.
And he has, in fact, gone to the Supreme Court of Florida to try to convene a grand jury. So, yeah.
Right.
It looks like he's made good on his statements there.
Right.
But doing some stuff didn't give me a lot of didn't give me a lot of confidence when I read that.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me.
Especially not an educated guy like
DeSantis is tiptoeing and waiting to see if the crowd supports him. You know, so he'll tiptoe, the crowd will support. Yeah. He'll tiptoe further, the crowd will support. He'll tiptoe further. He's careful. He's careful.
Yeah. We support you, Ron. Go get him. Sick him. You know?
Yeah.
Okay, let's keep it going and pivot Farmageddon. This is unbelievable. Wall Street Journal, China scraps most testing quarantine requirements in COVID-19 policy pivot. So whenever you see the word expressly, this might have been the impetus for the theme this week. China took another step away from its stringent COVID-19 controls Wednesday, easing quarantine and testing requirements and curtailing the power of local officials to shut down entire city blocks and raise barriers to domestic travel. Of these controls have grown increasingly unpopular and costly, and they failed to prevent the widespread COVID outbreak in November. In other words, you're getting these mass demonstrations last month against pandemic rules. But listen to this. I found this really interesting. The wide-ranging easing measures will allow COVID patients with mild or no symptoms to isolate at home instead of being shipped off to government quarantine facilities. Whoa. Most requirements for virus testing and scanning QR codes when entering premises will be scrapped, as will travel bans and whatnot. But anyway, it's a major shift in China. But they're over there, they'll put you in quarantine camp. So
Yeah, and they say it's COVID, but it's not. It's politics.
Right. Oh, that was another thing in the French guy. He's like, yeah, by the way, I never got COVID.
Right.
But in other words, I have more harm from the vaccine than from the disease I was trying to protect myself against, you know?
So I just read one sort of propaganda coverage of these exact events, and it sounds to me like they need a cover story for all the vaccine deaths they're expecting this winter in China.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so let's see what happens.
That's hard to, you know, the trouble with China is, and you and I know this since we've been doing money and markets together, is it's hard to get reliable information on what's going on. Thankfully, you have some subscribers who are knowledgeable.
We have some great subscribers who provide great intelligence on what's going to China. If it wasn't for them, we'd have no idea.
If it weren't for them, I mean, I'd be really uncomfortable doing any Chinese stories.
Right. Right.
It's like, well, you don't know what's going on, you know?
Right. Right. But the COVID policies have nothing to do with health. Nothing.
Yeah, no. Right. No.
With the ridiculous exception that they have a problem of how they're going to explain away all the injection deaths. Now, it was very interesting in this article. They kept talking about the risks of people getting the next variant of COVID. And they couldn't explain why, if everybody was fully vaccinated, that, you know, they were going to get the next variant of COVID. It's pretty funny the way they described
it. Right, right,
right, right. Right.
Right. Yeah, it's totally. You remember that one graphic we saw, the video, like it's 100% effective, and it's 99%. The headlines slowly whittle it down, and like it's 19% effective. Okay. Let's go to pushback. Okay. Our favorite topic every week, pushback. This, if we're going to lead off with a video, you know, I don't even have to tell you this is from Australia. This is Senator Gerard Rennick.
I love this guy. He's going to be a hero. Name. Our next hero publication. He's the hero. I love this guy.
And here's why. Take it away, Senator Gerard. Okay.
Well. Here we are, the end of 2022, and we've had over 10 million cases of COVID. The Australian Health Department, of course, stopped counting around September sometime because I think it was getting too embarrassing to admit that despite with over 20 million people being vaccinated, over half the country had caught COVID. Whatever happened to protecting you? Whatever happened to protecting you? But we don't want to talk about that anymore. We'll just pull it off the website and not discuss it. We'll not discuss it. And then we've got the excess deaths that Senator Babbitt talked about before. We had 8,706 extra deaths last year, despite the fact that New South Wales locked down for 3 months. So in theory, the deaths should have been lower like they were in 2020. But let's not count 2021 in the ABS figures. Or sorry, 2020, they're not counting. Let's pretend nothing happened there. Almost 140,000 jab injuries, more than all the injuries reported from vaccines since 1971. More than all the injuries put together. You've got an injury rate that's three times higher, and yet the TGA don't want to look at the signal. The whole point of having a database where doctors report these injuries, where they tick the box suspected, and as the doctors say, they don't fill these forms out because they don't have the spare time. They don't have a lazy 20 or 30 minutes sitting around filling these forms out if someone fell off a bike. No, no, they're ticking these boxes because they believe that the vaccine caused the injury that they are reporting. And yet the TGA want to pretend that there's nothing to see here.
That's fantastic.
We ran the whole rant on Financial Rebellion last week, and he's going to be hero of the week this on Friday, because I just want everybody to see this. So this guy is not a doctor or scientist. He's a finance guy. You know, but you can tell he's imbued himself enough with the statistics and the figures and gotten into it. And he understands exactly what an atrocity we are staring down the barrel of. He understands.
Yeah, he's a
and you're not going to shut him up.
Of Ed Dowd.
Yep.
Yeah, you're not going to shut him off. Okay. Let's turn to last story this week, last story in pushback from Russia. Putin signs into law a sweeping ban on LGBT propaganda. Russian president on Monday signed into law updated legislation which expands the current ban on the prohibition of what it dubs LGBT propaganda to children. Shrugging off widespread Western human rights criticisms leveled at Moscow, the new law now expands the banning to anything that promotes LGBT propaganda before the entire population. So if you broadcast it to the entire population, that's the kids, regardless of age or demographic, which makes it much more sweeping and broad. The law also aggressively targets transgender ideology. At this point, anything interpreted as advancing or displaying information that can make minors want to change their gender is banned, according to the new law. This includes promoting non-traditional sexual relations. So pretty serious ban there by Putin in Russia.
Right. So, So Putin has constantly focused on the issues of culture. And what's very interesting, at the same time we see Putin doing this, we see the Ukraine start to seize assets from the Russian Orthodox Church in Kiev. So, it you know, in the interest of asymmetrical warfare, it wouldn't surprise me if there's a connection.
Yeah, right. Right. Wouldn't surprise me either. But anyway, let's turn to charts. You ready?
Yep.
Okay, here we go.
Yep. So TYX is the 30-year Treasury bond yield. And as we can see, it's coming down finally. So it appears we've turned the corner. We have the Fed meeting today. So the question is, are they going to bump 50 basis points is the expectation. But I wanted to show for the year what happens when interest rates rise, of course. You know, that you have the 20-year Treasury ETF, TLT, down at the bottom. It's down 28.7% for the year. The S&P down 13.85%. And gold, it's up just a tiny bit, you know, and that big gold trade certainly helped. But, you know, traditionally, as interest rates go up and capital gets more expensive, we've been in a world of cheap capital. It's downward pressure on all the other or most of the other assets. And that's what you see in this chart. But interest rates now coming a little bit back down. And if we do have, deflationary expectations for next year. So the question is, will a Fed bump send them back up or are they going to continue to come down? But it's been a big change in the paradigm because we've had cheap capital for decades, and this year is our first year of, you know, capital's not cheap anymore all of a sudden.
Yeah, great point. Okay, let's move on. FinViz on the year.
Okay, so this is the 1 year inflation chart, and so it goes a little bit back, a little bit into 2022. But as you can see, gas and fossil fuels are at the top. So we've got natural gas the highest. And orange juice. In the three month, orange juice is number one. It beat out natural gas, if you can imagine that. But we see the dollar strong for the year, and not surprising. But we see a lot more coming down, and that's as a result of the Fed's policy and the central bank's policy of interest, bringing up interest rates, and that's You know, that's taken a lot of the air out of the commodities bull. Commodities are still strong, though. So commodities
right.
for 2023,
right.
commodities still look good, even though, you know, the interest rates have clearly brought things down. Yeah, so you're seeing a lot of the currencies down.
Look at the yen, down 16.3%. Yep. Wow.
Yeah, that's really painful.
Wow.
Because they're having to, remember, they have to import a ton of oil. And if your currency is down that much, you're really getting squeezed. So go to the three month and you'll see. You see the.
Here we go. Orange juice leading the pack. Wow. Right. Orange juice and silver. That's good.
Yeah, silver's come back up. Silver was really having a tough year and silver's come back up.
Wow.
But again, what this says is the Fed raising interest rates has brought, you know, has pulled a lot of the air out of the commodities balloon.
Yeah.
Boy, where's really the has. VIX?
The VIX is way down
VIX,
here.
Yeah, see? VIX down.
Wow. Yeah. What was it on the year? Let's just go back up and see if we can spot
I would say
the
it's
VIX.
Positive.
Right there.
Yeah.
It's right there. Right.
Yeah,
that's
so
a big change.
We're still in a world of real risk, and that is a big change because it means the Fed put is not.
Yeah.
The financial guys can't count on the Fed put anymore. Okay, so let's.
Yeah.
We had another one.
No, that's it.
Really?
Yeah. I
we looked at Raytheon. I thought there was.
Let me go to my.
No, you're right. You're right. Because we had. Did we show the Tether chart?
Yeah
we did. Okay, that's it.
Yep. Yep.
Yep. But a few announcements.
Okay. Yep. Okay, so let's get to the announcements, and here we go.
Yeah, so Saturday we had Doctors for COVID Ethics. John joined us for the third section on moving beyond the control grid. It was an amazing symposium. If you go to the commentary at Solari, we link to the raw feed. Now, they're working on getting all the individual videos out, and I have to tell you... one of the presentations, Sasha Latipova gave again her presentation about the extent to which COVID was an operation under military law. And John, you see it. And it's one of the clearest overviews of what's really happened. It's called Intent to Harm. And it's remarkable because she's a very experienced pharmaceutical executive. And you really see. So if you look at the third section, you went first, then Corey Lynn. Then Carolyn Betts and I, Carolyn stepped in when Patrick Wood got sick, and then Sasha and Meryl Nass go through the sort of military law, biowarfare, biodefense.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that Patrick really has pointed out is the Biden administration is throwing just piles of money at the biodefense industry. And after you listen to Sasha's presentation, you realize this is really scary because they intend to use this whole infrastructure for control. Anyway, but it was an unbelievable symposium. It's all up there. And as we get the videos out, we'll publish them.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't wait to see that one. You said she lays it out in 15 minutes flat, which I like that.
People, very good.
Okay. Hero of the week. There you go.
Yeah. She's hero again. And it's one of the clearest overviews of sort of the integration of the different aspects. It's funny, we just had a great talk in the Doctors for COVID Ethics about what are we going to call it now? Because we can't call it the COVID-19 pandemic because it wasn't a pandemic. So do you call it a democide? Do you call it a mass atrocity? Do you call it a genocide? What do you call it? So we're grappling with a name. And if you have thoughts about what we ought to call it, I would encourage you to post them at subscriber input because we need a word that is an accurate description. And Sasha is clear. If you and she's done a tremendous amount of work with Mike Yaden and the Bad Batch group. And she said, look, these are not pharmaceuticals and they're not medicine. And they're operating under military law. And you can call it an experiment, but if you look at what it is, it's a weapon.
Yeah.
It's a weapon. So it's
you're right. The language is very important in the war for control.
Right.
So we've got winning the battle of language.
Right. So it was a mass atrocity. It was a democide. It was a genocide. You know, but I'm not convinced that's the best word for it. But you can't call it a pandemic because it wasn't a pandemic. A group of people got together under military law and poisoned millions and millions of people. We could call it a poisoning. I mean, what a military poisoning? So we need a word.
Yeah.
So
let me chew on. I got a couple weeks.
Yeah.
But back to announcements. Here we go. We'll get to this.
So this is our holiday greetings. So every Christmas, if you go to holidaygreetings.tillery.com, we do a holiday greeting, but we choose our Christmas donations and we make donations to the groups that have, you know, just contributed a lot this year. And we have three baskets. One is the rule of law. So litigators, people are going into court and fighting for our rights. Then the new media, people who are bringing transparency, and then a couple of prayer warriors. So you can read all about it at holidaygreetings.solaria.com or just link from the homepage. And and we're celebrating the kids, as always.
Yeah.
Okay, and like we have to announce we're not going to have Money in Markets next week, but we are going to have Money in Markets in the last week of the month. And you want to tell them a little bit about what we're going to be up to?
Yeah, well, what we talked about was try to come up with a best of stories of the year. So probably be, you know, 10 or so top stories that really sort of define the year. And then 3 to 5 rants we really liked.
Right. So who did, what are the best pushbacks? And this one's hard for me. It's hard for me.
Best pushbacks, right. Okay.
Best pushbacks. Who did the best pushbacks? Although I have a feeling.
So it doesn't have to be a video.
Yeah.
So maybe it'd be 3 videos, 5, whatever it would be. So if you've got ideas on the best pushback or the best rant, you know, drop it in the comments section. We'll take a look.
Okay.
That's going to be fun. That'll be good. Because we've forgotten about stuff. I'm going through the spreadsheets and I see stuff like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that one.
I know. You have to be very disciplined about going back because it's easy to forget.
Right.
And one of the things I think the reason why I think it's so important to go back and do this at the year end, we've had so many great people doing so many great things. I mean, like that senator in Australia. I mean, there are thousands, if not millions of people doing brave and courageous and amazing things to push back. And when you bring them all together and celebrate them, you realize, wow, you know, it's pretty cool to be a human.
It's a useful exercise to do this at the end of the year. I'm glad we're doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not going to see you before Christmas, so
no.
John Titus?
No.
Thank you for everything you do for us. We love doing Money in Markets now, and I just hope you have a wonderful holiday season with your family, and you're going to be moving. You're going to be moving into a new home for Christmas,
right? Yeah, so the background is sort of it's a nudge in the direction that I'll be going. I am moving, so the studio will change around. The CIA safe house will go the way of the dinosaur or the dodo bird. You see more. I think we're going to kind of go with a Solari, you know, maybe orange, gold, yellow type background canary.
Okay.
But anyway, just sort of a color background that's sort of flat and no distractions.
Well, have a Merry Christmas. And to all of you out there, we just hope you have a wonderful holiday season. Fill up that joy bucket. Next year is going to be intense. So, you know, now's the holiday. Fill up that joy bucket. It's nothing better for you.
Yeah. Merry Christmas, Catherine. And Merry Christmas, Solari subscribers. It's been a good year.
That's been a good year. Thank you, John.